Hello and welcome to another fantastic, best ever episode, no pressure, Phil, of Double E's Talk Tech. My name is Mike Hoffman.
I'm Daniel Bogdanoff, and with us again, we have Phil Grisak. And today we're going to talk about radar, which I'm pretty pumped about.
I do have to say, before we get started, because there's probably more exciting applications of radar to spend time on, but I rented a car recently out in Detroit that had the adaptive cruise control, which I'm assuming uses radar.
Ooh, yeah.
And at first I didn't trust it. And so I had it turned on, I'm cruising, and I had my foot just hovering on the brake. But this thing was, it was life-changing. Every car should have this technology. Super awesome. I could be in stop-and-go traffic, and it's just creeping along for me, all the way down to 0 miles an hour.
Especially in Detroit, where I used to live. It could be bone crushing on the stop and go traffic. So definitely,
the road quality did most of the bone
crushing. Pay extra attention to this podcast while driving because you don't have to worry about the car in front of you anymore.
Exactly. watching your YouTube video on the dashboard. Don't do that.
So let's start kind of at the beginning. I don't know how much of the history of radar you know. My understanding is actually the original display for like World War II era for radar was on an oscilloscope screen.
You have to fact check me on that. Sounds accurate. At least you're being confident when you say it.
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. It was like, I think it was some sort of XY mode. I'd love to hear in the comments if you know more than I do. I did a little bit of research, couldn't find too much on it. But there's a great article about like the blip on the oscilloscope screen when it was Pearl Harbor and all that.
Yeah. Radar's been around for a really long time. And obviously it was, I don't want to say popularized, but used exceptionally in World War II, especially for early warning radar. So like Pearl Harbor, they had quite a few radars along the islands there, and they saw planes coming. They just didn't have a good way to communicate that.
So you know, you've heard that if you eat carrots, it's better for your eyes?
Yeah,
I have. Do you know the origin of that? That's actually an urban legend. That's not actually true.
I'm gonna guess that was the big carrot lobby.
That was because the original like early warning radars were, maybe it was sonar, I don't know, were like top secret, right? The fact that they existed and could see things before you could visibly see them was top secret. So the British military government started the rumor that the reason that we were detecting enemy craft so early was because they made sure to feed all their soldiers extra carrots.
I have not heard that explanation. I like it.
So, check me on that. But that's my understanding of the origin of carrots make your eyesight better, is attributed to radar.
This is why Daniel has a very deep distrust of the government.
And glasses.
And a slight orange tinge.
It hasn't worked so far.
So, speaking of the British, though, in radar, they had a really interesting radar system that was all along their coastline called the Chain Home Radar System. And it comprised of somewhere in the teens to low 20s of radar sites that was all pointed towards, their western front. Hmm. And, the real reason that they wanted an early warning radar, sorry, kind of jumped right into that.
No, you're good.
Is they had a limited size of force, so limited number of aircraft, sure, and offensive and ships. So they needed some sort of time to coordinate their counterattack or defenses. So the sooner they could identify, friend or foe mm-hmm. that's coming inbound over the channel, then they can make plans and organize accordingly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So radar in its infancy was really a defensive and information mechanism.
Okay.
To drive certain types of strategic and tactical actions.
So originally, as radar, the way I understand it is you basically send out a known frequency, and if you measure it back, then there's something there.
In a very basic sense, I mean, if we're talking about, say, a pulse radar, we're going to send out a pulse in time. And if you listen to our RF podcast, that's modulated on a carrier frequency. And that pulse, just like sonar or echolocation of like bats and dolphins, if that pulse gets reflected back, we know the time we sent it and the time it comes back. So we can figure out different
things. We know
things
how
like
fast
range.
It travels.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sure it's not now. Was it originally just like one tone or one pure frequency that they checked, or how did? Because you said modulate, like, you have to modulate something with a mixer, but I don't know, is that originally how it's done? Or
so I'm sure some people will keep me honest on this. No problem. But, usually it's done at a particular frequency. So lower frequencies tend to be more useful for search type radars and early warning. So
okay.
It was probably in the, you know, high megahertz to low gigahertz range. And they would send out a pulse with that single frequency on that pulse.
Okay.
And see what kind of characteristics change when they got the return pulse back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does a modern radar look like? So I know that's
good
a
question. Yeah.
Big jump since the 40s. But.
So modern radars, it really depends on the application. It could be giant radars that are installed on basically old oil rigs for early warning systems. So those exist and they move it around.
So there's these old oil rigs like anchored out in the middle of the ocean somewhere?
Anchored out in the middle of the ocean with this giant, you know, basically white golf ball sitting on top of it, what they call a radome. And inside that radome, they have kind of a big radar dish that, you know, spins around, or they move it in different directions to detect targets that they expect.
Hmm. Now, one thing I've always been curious about, and I don't know if you can speak to this or not, but say we have one of these radar, you know, radomes on an oil rig. I don't know let me say 1,000 miles is like maybe a typical range of how far away I could see something. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
So I'm 1,000 miles away and in a couple thousand feet up, you're looking at a pretty low angle that it's able to detect something, you know. And the planes are pretty sharp. How is anything being reflected back at all? But from the geometry of the shapes that it's reflecting off of.
So a lot of it has to do with what frequencies you're going to use, as well as a ton of different processing techniques. But if you're trying to go for super long range and very small object detection, you're going to choose those things to make sure you can resolve the target that you're trying to identify. But more importantly, you could take advantage of different effects of the Earth. So bouncing off the sea, bouncing off the Earth, as well as bouncing off, you know, the troposphere and things like that. Hmm. So that signal ends up going further and bounces back in equal distance. Obviously, there's a lot of different technical issues with that. You know,
I'm sure the ham radio guys that listen will tell us all about like bouncing their signals to Japan and stuff.
But. So it just really depends on, you know, when you ask what does the radar look like, or how can you do this or that? It depends. Well, what are you really trying to do? So one radar that's really good for, you know, if you're flying in towards an airport, you know, say Breckenridge, they might have a lot of wind shear. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the pilot needs to point his airplane down to take care of this updraft. And then when he crosses a wind shear barrier, he needs to pull up sharp because, you know, otherwise he's going to slam it to the ground.
Flying into Breckenridge.
There's radars to identify
feels like Denver,
that.
Yeah.
But
to identify the shear.
To identify that wind.
So, yeah. Like, you can actually, like, tell the difference in pressure, and that's going to reflect something. Because I've seen, like, scuba diving, in some cases where saltwater and freshwater hit, it almost looks like there's, like, saltwater river flowing.
Yeah.
Or a freshwater river flowing. It's the same physics, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so similar concept. You just have this change of medium that's going to affect something, and that's what you want to measure.
That makes sense.
And there, of course, is, you know, radars on, you know, the tips of missiles, you know, trying to find its target that it's locked in on and doing really fast corrections for its last phases before it is terminal, we'll say.
Okay, fair enough. So is it, you know, obvious? So, you know, there's a couple techniques there. Can you go into a little more detail on those without giving away, like, you know, secrets and stuff?
So, ultimately, with any radar, what you're trying to do is detect something.
Sure.
So you're trying to figure out range. You're trying to figure out angle, elevation, or, you know, angle could be azimuth. You're also trying to figure out velocity change and things like that. So different techniques revolve around how wide of a pulse do I send out?
Like how wide in frequency?
How wide in time?
Okay.
You know, so what's my pulse width? Is it a millisecond? Is it a microsecond?
Okay.
What's that going to do to what kind of targets I can resolve, what kind of ranges I can resolve. So if a target's at 1,000 miles, if I send a really long pulse and it starts being sent back, is the next pulse I'm going to send out start to interfere with that?
Sure.
Versus do I send out a really short pulse, say like a microsecond or sub-microsecond, where I have a lot longer dead time before my second pulse comes out so I can listen longer for any reflections that may come back. So that's one thing, to make sure that you have good range resolution sensitivity. Azimuth, you know, if you just think of a spinning radar, you know, you know what direction you're pointing, so you can deduce that. Elevation, same kind of thing. You know, usually it's a physical attribute of the radar or the elements that you're pointing. For velocity, you know you're going to send out a pulse with a certain frequency. Well, based on Doppler shifts, the kind of, if you think of the classic high school physics example, if you're standing on a train platform and a train's coming towards you, does it sound higher pitch or lower pitch?
Sure.
When it's coming closer, it's going to be a higher pitch. So,
and based on the pitch shift, you should be able to know how fast it's moving.
Exactly. Yeah. So all those things come together to help you figure out where is this in distance, elevation, azimuth, how fast is it moving, and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So those are some of the simplistic things. And when you get into some of the more detailed topics, if you think about radar cross-section, so if I send this pulse towards 747, the reflected pulse back isn't going to look exactly the same as what I sent.
Sure.
The power is going to change because there's different scatterers that, you know, emulate.
Well, it's just going to reflect in different directions.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. Yeah. Like, what comes back at you? Because if it's a really...
It's not a cube flying at you, right?
They actually have spheres in space for calibration.
So, say what? What?
Yeah, so for radar calibration, they have spheres up in space, basically satellites, and they know where they're at. So they send, you know, radar pulses to the sphere. And since it's a perfect sphere, or as perfect as you get, you know, they have an idealized estimation of what that return pulse should look like, so they can calibrate their systems.
What are these made out of?
That I don't know.
Okay. We have a recurring theme of space lasers on this podcast, so was basically it, right? Just not visible lasers.
That's
and not secret.
It's energy, just a different wavelength.
Okay.
we'll count it.
That's pretty cool. I did not know that we have spheres in space for
just
calibrating
like,
radar.
If you think
that's
like
some 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of stuff.
Well, they have like reflectors on the moon. So people use like laser telescopes to send a signal to the moon and bounce it back to measure the distance.
Yeah, Apollo missions like left mirrors on the moon?
Yeah, mirrors are certain types of reflectors. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Where have we been, Mike?
Not the moon, I guess.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that was like spring break, I don't know, 2006.
No. Okay. No.
So all, what this is all coming back to is you send this pulse towards
Where else are there weird space objects that we should know about?
Places you know and places you don't.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
The secret moon.
So
that's a space station.
So NASA throws these up in space for government agencies and just anyone can use. Are they geosynchronous, I guess? So
I don't know exactly if they're geosynchronous or on a particular orbit. And I'm not sure if NASA sent them up or if...
Secret NASA.
DOD
NASA.
Missions. Yeah, the X-37B put them up there.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys know what that is, but anyway.
Let's not go there.
So what this is all coming back to is we send that pulse out, it gets returned, and there's different scattering effects. So I get less power, different change of frequency on my pulse. And based on what that profile comes back, really advanced processing, what they might do is have a library of what that return pulse looks like for a given excitation pulse. So I get this pulse back, and I can say, oh, that's a bird. That's a fighter jet. That's a blimp. So people start to catalog what things are so they can start to identify them based on
You run a cal so you can basically normalize out your sending pulse and you basically normalize your return pulse through and compare it against this library of... This library has to get bigger and bigger every day, right?
Yeah, and there's different techniques. This is a very simplistic way. Sure. I mean, people think, you get certain effects off of propeller planes because the pulse hits essentially those propellers that have edges, and that provides a very unique return characteristic. So
that makes sense.
Things like that are different characteristics people look for to try to classify different targets or different returns.
So you mentioned, I think, near the end of the last podcast, there's some like subterfuge if you detect that you're getting painted with a radar.
Sure.
And you want to send back that you're like in a different location. The response time, like how fast would you have to process that information to be able to send back a reasonable pulse? Like that's got to be
pretty darn fast.
So you have to like be anticipating it essentially.
Well, there's different techniques. So ultimately it starts with understanding that there's a target illuminating you. So usually on jets of different types, if we're talking military jets, they'll have several antennas placed around the jet, and they'll all come back to what they call a radar warning receiver. and it will start to pick up the pulses that is being incident upon it. And generally, you know what kind of radars are in a certain theater of operation. So it says, hey, you're being painted with this kind of radar. We should do something about it.
Sure.
So maybe an electronic warfare officer starts to take a manual action to do something.
This is not someone in the plane, I assume. This is someone
It could be someone in a plane. Okay. Yeah. So someone, you know, in a full G suit and everything and in a jet.
A co-pilot or
I'd just like
that.
to flight engineer.
Yeah.
take a personal moment here and say if you or anyone else can get me on a fighter jet, that's always been a like a bucket list item for me. So
next to
carry
us.
On. Yeah. Okay.
Free Double E's Talk Tech podcast for the rest of your life if you can get Danny on a fighter plane.
I don't know if I'm committing to that, but
right here in
I'll
Colorado Springs, you might be able to make a buddy at the Air Force Academy.
I know. Actually, yeah, I have a high school.
Probably best bet.
There you go.
Anyway,
they picked me up.
Anyway,
work in your fighter
jet. I had, you know, you never know who's watching.
There you go.
So, you know.
Now, how do they know? You said that there's usually an idea of what radars are being used in whatever theater of operation, but isn't the whole idea of using radar to maybe have them not know that you're doing that?
Yeah.
Are they checking literally every frequency possible within some sort of range? What's stopping them from maybe using different frequencies between every pulse? There's got to be all kinds of crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of different techniques. Frequency hopping, so you change the frequency of radar from pulse to pulse. You can have modulation on each pulse. So aside from just having the frequency of the carrier, you could do different things like phase shifts, amplitude changes, frequency chirps. So you're changing the frequency from 2 gigahertz to 2.1 gigahertz over just the narrow duration of the pulse. So a lot of different techniques to avoid detection, to get better performance out of radar, or to reduce your susceptibility to jamming.
So I guess if you know your, you know, calibration characterization profile, you can do almost whatever you want with your transmitted signal as long as you can normalize it back when it comes. So
yeah,
okay,
yeah. So all these techniques come into play to, you know, enhance your sensitivity and your capability to resolve something that you're looking for.
Okay,
but kind of looping back to the question that you had of, you know, well, how do you spoof a radar to say you're somewhere you're not? Well,
yeah.
You have to know what is incident upon you, you know, what's the pulse width, frequency, and all these things. And then you have to have an idea of how that's going to act over time. And then you start to send out different pulses, maybe advance in time or lagging in time to make it think that you're closer in distance or further away, or maybe a Doppler shift to you're
velocity.
Speeding up or slowing down or things like that.
Okay. So this is going to put a whole new level of insurance fraud out there for the automotive market, right? Like,
oh man,
I was using adaptive cruise control.
People jamming other people's. God,
that'll be the day. Doubtful, but who knows?
Now, is this assuming that you're able to fully absorb any radar that's being fired at you, or are you somehow adding to whatever you know is being reflected back to modify it? Maybe one of both.
Well, say the tip of your fighter jet is always going to reflect some of that power back. So you know the original or the intended reflection that the radar wants to see is always going to be there. What you got to do, and there's different techniques to do this, you know, is maybe drown out the pulses that are being returned with a higher power or something like that, so that your pulses are looked at instead of the actual real pulses.
So it would almost require a pretty intimate understanding of the other guys.
Yeah, there's
hardware.
You have to have really intimate understanding of the radar you're trying to defeat. You have to have a good system to, you know, take care of that in a very quick fashion, as well as good knowledge on board that, you know, something's happening so you could take action if there's any manual intervention needed.
That's what's still blowing my mind. You're saying the tip of the airplane is reflecting something back. I'm just imagining like sound waves or pressure waves or something coming at a plane and all of it just basically going around the plane because it's like a needle point at the tip usually. Is there just like one little tiny micro spot on the tip that somehow has a direct angle back at the source? Or
if you think about it, if you have a perfect sphere in space that you're able to calibrate against, if it's actually perfect, then you're going to have an infinitely small return, you know.
Yeah.
Point that's reflected directly back at you.
Not all radars are calibrated to that
surely,
space,
but
space sphere.
But I mean, if that's, you know, the level of calibration that we're able to get to, surely an airplane has something, right?
You look at a plane, there's a lot of edges, you know. Don't think of the plane as one singular reflector. You know, it's not just this flat panel flying at you. You know, you got all the wingtips, you got the nose tip, you got the interface between the cockpit glass and the fuselage, you know, all these different things. And when you look at, you know, stealth aircraft, you see a lot of geometric designs on it to help break up or scatter the returned energy in a different direction than directly back. So there's always energy reflected. There's techniques to mitigate and minimize that, but you got to understand what that is and then find ways that your jamming signal can overpower that reflection.
I mean, obviously it works. I'm not debating if it works or not.
Sorry about that for anyone who's paying.
So what I really want are some flashcards to hold up with profiles, and we could play, you know, fighter jet or bird.
Yeah,
I think that's like actually what they have to do, right? Like
essentially, yeah.
Teaching a radar with flashcards.
If a bird flew right in front of a radar transmitter, is it no longer a bird? Like, is it that kind of energy or?
I mean, peak energies can be anywhere from like kilowatts to megawatts, certainly.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive how much power they put out and things like that. And speaking of energy and, you know, is it a plane or a bird? I mean, is it a ship or, you know, a dinghy? I mean, there's a really good article, I think it was about a year old or so. The U.S. Navy came out with a new hull design for one of their destroyers, I think the Zumwalt class. And they had to turn on like this crazy beacon
because I heard about that.
They almost like started just plowing into all these boats because everyone was looking at their radar and fog, and they thought it was like a dinghy, where in reality it's just like 100
massive
plus yard long destroyer.
No, yeah, they have to like output a radar pulse so that other ships don't like run into them in the fog or the dark.
So it's
pretty
crazy.
We'll try and find that and put a link in.
Awesome.
Radar is just not about, you know, pulses. It's, you know, physical design and things like that. So it's pretty complex.
Okay. We're kind of running out of time. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Radars are really cool. It's
yes, they are.
They're in a lot more places than you think. And
expound on that.
Science rules.
Well, I mean, aside from more so in cars and things like that, I mean, people are using, you know, laser radars, you know, to measure distances really accurately.
I use one on the golf course.
There you go.
Okay.
Perfect everyday example of a radar.
Rangefinder.
Yep.
Awesome. Cool.
Can't think of a better way to end it.
Okay. Well, I mean, a stupid question.
Every episode, we always run out of time. How does that work?
Well, we basically talk until we're out of time. Yeah. So, you know, if you're not running out of time, then it's probably not something we should have been talking about. Stupid questions for Phil.
Ooh,
man.
Best part.
Would you rather radar be sensing a bird or a fighter jet?
Bird.
Okay.
But it could always end up being a fighter jet. So I don't know. Sorry, didn't mean to make anybody paranoid there.
What does radar stand for?
Radio detection and ranging, if I remember right. Or?
Radio detection and ranging. That sounds
get your pitchforks out. Uh-oh. Sorry if I
know.
That one is the radar guy here.
See, that was like a reverse. Usually the stupid question is supposed to make me sound stupid, but I think you just got caught.
Yeah.
Sorry, bud.
Whoops.
I don't know either, so I guess
what is your favorite radar frequency? What country has the favorite radar? No, I'm just kidding. So that's all we have time for today. Make sure you subscribe to the Keyset Oscilloscopes YouTube channel and to Double E's Talk Tech in your favorite podcast engine. You can also go to www.eestalktech.com, and there's a little button you can hit to get a reminder or get a notification when the next post shows up. And we do time tags in the descriptions of all of them, so you can just click through to something that looks interesting if you want to skip through it.
Daniel actually personally emails every one of our subscribers for every episode, so get on that list.
In a sense, yes, it's automatic, but I do hit the post button, so therefore I effectively email all of you individually. So that's all for today. Thanks, Phil, for your time. We appreciate having you on here. If you have questions for Phil or you want to hear about a specific topic, let us know in the comments, or just probably in the comments is the best way to do it. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Is he clipping? I don't know.
Should I turn it down?
It looked all right. Go for it.
Check out the melody. Check out the melody. Check out the melody.